It's The Scratch with Joe Weston and Mike the Intern.
Mike the Intern, Joe Weston, back together again, long overdue. It is The Scratch, our podcast, where we just talk about music, life, and other things. I don't know what that is.
A lot of other things.
A lot of other things. And we sat here and stared at each other in silence for about 15 minutes because we couldn't figure out what we were going to talk about. And then inspiration struck me. I was at a remote over the weekend and had a couple of listeners come up to me. One of them was a father and daughter. And the girl obviously is into music big time, and she likes classic rock and has her favorites. And we started talking about some of the bands and stuff she's into. It was really cool. Really nice to hear first a female and second of a kid that's in high school that likes the music that is arguably the best ever. Now, where I'm going with this is we started talking about Led Zeppelin. And my wife was sitting there and she goes, you know, he believes that he thinks, and I'll get into this in a second, that the Black Crowes are better than Led Zeppelin. Now, let me get a little bit more clear on that. One day we were talking, and my wife's favorite band is Led Zeppelin, and she and I were talking, and it was right after the Record Store Day release of the Zoso tour that the Black Crowes did with Jimmy Page. And they had a Live at the Greek album they released. It's on like red, white, and blue vinyl. Very cool collection. Incredible concert. And after I listened to it, and I think it was the first time I'd actually heard it, because when it happened years ago, I just didn't pay attention to it. But now I later on was like, I'm going to check this out. I felt after I listened to that was the best representation of Led Zeppelin ever recorded live. And I said, you put that against Song Remains the Same, which in reality is more of a studio album than it is a live album. There's tons of overdubs on it. And you take what the Black Crowes did with Jimmy Page and you put it up against what Led Zeppelin did live. And I'm telling you right now, that Zoso record is better and it sounds better. Now, those two girls, they denied it. My wife and the girl that was talking to me about Led Zeppelin, they're like, you're crazy. There's no way. But I think it is. So finally, after all of that introduction, that's who I believe. At least they did a better job of than the original, not the studio, the live. Is there anything in your mind that they was done better the second time around?
I think you and I have this conversation frequently because I think that I'm a big believer that feel is more important than being just a technically great.
Yeah, I agree with that. 100%.
Just a technically great musician. My favorite band that you guys probably hear me talk about a lot when we do our podcast here is The Replacements, and they frequently didn't play in tune or in time but it's the feel.
It's the attitude.
It's the feel, it's the attitude. And you can sit there and you can go, this band is better than that band. You can say that the Black Crowes with Jimmy Page is better than what Led Zeppelin was, but I'm going to disagree with you too, because I just think the whole package of Led Zeppelin, the whole thing.
Again, I didn't say studio. I didn't say the writing. Obviously, Led Zeppelin wrote those songs, so they're inherently better because they wrote them. But I'm just saying, as a live presentation, that Zoso tour is so good.
I would say this, though. If you put Celebration Day up, if you listen to Kashmir on Celebration Day, it just blows me away that those guys just like, oh, we're going to play a show and boom, they played a show.
And then it was done.
Yeah, and it was done. Now, I know they still secretly rehearse together sometimes. They still do stuff occasionally. But, you know, it's just amazing that they can walk into a show that big and say, okay, we're going to do this and we're going to play.
After years and years of not doing it. I agree with that. And Celebration Day is a good example. But again, back to feel. And that is, again, what I'm talking about here. That feel of those shows that they did with the Black Crowes, or at least Jimmy Page did, that is the best live feeling I've ever. And again, I liked the Black Crowes, but I never really liked them until I saw them live. And then I saw what they could do live. And I was like, holy crap, it all makes sense to me now. And a lot of the times we've had an episode about that where you didn't really get it until you saw it. And then you saw it and you're like, oh, I get it now. That's kind of how I felt after I heard that. And then I kind of got a completely different appreciation for what the Black Crowes did. But I mean, it's just one of those things. And of course, yes, it is subjective, but go home and listen to that record, man. It's so good. But you're right. Years later, they did do a pretty damn good job on Celebration Day, but I still say Zoso's better. It just is.
Well, so, that's one of the things that I love about music and in our conversations is that we frequently disagree about a lot of things as far as music goes, because we just come from different eras and we come from different viewpoints about music. You're a musician. I'm not. I'm a DJ. That's what I wanted to be. And so just certain things, we have this different perspective, and I love getting somebody else's perspective on music, because I think that just expands, you know, who you are, your feel. I mean, and, but there's nothing more frustrating to me, at least, like when I'm, and we again have this discussion a lot. I'm a huge Clash fan, and mm-hmm. you've listened to the Clash records. You've made an effort. And
what did I say? I said they are everything that I should like, but I ultimately said I like the idea of the Clash more than I actually like the Clash. Now, that doesn't mean I hate the Clash. It's just that I like what they bring and brought to the table. But again, it just doesn't get me in the inside. Now, for years and years and years and years, I was always like, Velvet Underground, that is just garbage. Just garbage. Growing up, I was like, this is garbage. Teens, 20s, really. And it wasn't until like my mid to late 20s, and I don't know why, I just rediscovered it. And it was the Loaded album that actually got me back into the Velvet Underground. And then I was like, holy crap, this is awesome. Then I went back and I was like, oh my God, this, I even love the Nico solo album, because it's technically Velvet Underground 2. It's just Nico singing everything, which is kind of weird, but it's a great record. Now, 18-year-old Mike would have said, you're insane. So one day I could be sitting in my mid-40s going, dude, Comeback Rock is one of the greatest albums ever made. You know what I mean? Yeah. But who knows? It's like seasons in your tastes, I suppose. But yeah, I agree. I know.
I started Velvet Underground with VU.
Yeah.
And I love that record.
Which is a completely different sound than the earlier stuff, too.
I love that album. And I've heard a couple of people recently say this thing about Velvet Underground and Modern Lovers, is that neither one of those bands sold very many records, but everybody who went to see those two bands play probably went out and started a band.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%.
And were just hugely influential in the way that they, you know, that they created music and the way that they did things.
Their approach.
Yeah, and I think what you're saying is very important, too, because it is sometimes age that as you get through stuff, it starts to make more sense to you. I don't know if the Clash will ever make sense to you, because I mean, there's a little bit of them that's trapped in the late 1970s or early 80s because of just a political climate.
Are they like would you say that, because let me stop you, for like kids in their early teens, for some reason, they always gravitate to the Doors. The Doors are like an early junior high. I hate to put that label on them, but the Doors are almost a really good junior high band. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah.
When you're going through the emotions and you're depressed and you're sad and nobody gets you, the Doors get you. And that they got me big time. But then I grew up and it kind of got over it. But now, late years later, I go back and I still love the Doors, but it's nostalgia sometimes, and I feel like maybe I missed that boat on the Clash. Like, it's a nostalgic thing. You know what I mean?
I don't know. Your point's well taken about the Doors, because I remember there was a guy I used to work with. This still bothers him. Was I said to him one day, everybody has their Doors phase, and
it's true.
Yeah, and he recently like emailed me and said, I'm still going through my Doors phase, and I was like, man, you need to get over that. You just really need to get over it, but. They're a band you go back to.
Yeah, yeah.
They're a band you go back to. It's like there was a time that I just could not listen to the Doors. If I heard another Doors song, I was just going to be, ugh. And one of the things that probably kind of tripped that for me was Michael Stipe had done an interview in Kansas City right before a concert that I went to see. And he said Jim Morrison was a second-rate American poet. And I'd never really thought of it that way. But I thought, you know, if you'd never listened to a Doors song and you're sitting there, you can almost predict what he's going to say next. But after being out of the Doors for so long and now doing the Vinyl Club show, and I do play a lot of Doors in the Vinyl Club show, when you listen to that band, that's, to me, one of the true definitions of a band, yeah. is that it's not Jim Morrison.
No, it's the collective.
He's part of it. It's collective. You know, those guys all came from such different backgrounds and were so into different things, and they melded it into something that was really different. And again, it's a band that you go back to and you go, wow, there's a really interesting feel to this band. Now, I'm not going to sit and listen to Unknown Soldier over and over.
No. And I don't care about the Lizard King either, like I did when I was 13. But as an adult, I agree with you 100%. You got to appreciate what it is. And there are still some amazing songs on there that I love listening to.
I think the one band that I keep that I go to a lot as far as classic rock goes, that I just go, wow, that was an amazing band. That's the band. When I think of classic rock, they're the first band I think of, and it's Creedence.
Yeah.
I just love the feel. And again, it's a situation where even though John Fogerty was really the driving force of that band, again, it was a band effort, you know, and anything that he's done since then has not been quite the same. It's always like he's trying to recapture a little bit of that, but he can't.
No, because it was a group collective. I mean, Fogerty drove the train. Had he not been such a militant band leader and making them practice, you know, 5 days a week for 8 hours a day, they wouldn't have been as tight, nearly as good as they were together. And I think that also has something to do with the songs they were writing and what they were able to do, because they put the work in, which is very tough. But CCR, I agree. I can always go back to it. It's just like going home. But the thing I was going to say is sometimes I wish bands like that and like the Doors were more progressive in the sense that I can get a different flavor from them, not the same flavor. And what I mean by that is there are certain periods of Floyd that I'll go back to. Like right now, I'm just like post Waters Gilmore phase. You know what I mean? Listen to Momentary and Division Bell and Pulse and all that stuff. And that has its own thing. And then every now and then I'm like, hey, let's go back and do the film soundtrack era or whatever it is. You know what I mean? And it's just one of those things where I kind of wish CCR had that, but they didn't have enough time to do it. The Beatles kind of did. You know what I mean? They kind of did. They had separate phases, maybe like three-ish. I guess the early, the experimental, and then what would be the latter years are definitely three phases of the Beatles.
I think there's even more to it than that. And if you go through and you listen to all the Beatles albums, you just listen to them, you can feel the arc and the progression as it goes through. And just, it's an amazing thing, especially when you think it's condensed into 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at those guys too and you go, wow, they changed a lot over the 8 years.
They did. They had to. They're multimillionaires in their early 20s. All right. Well, that's good stuff.
Go out and listen to a record that you haven't listened to in a while that you don't get.
Yeah. Try again. That's a good way to end this. If you heard a record, someone put it on your lap, go pick up it again if you didn't like it and try again.
Yep.
Because it might hit you this time. It definitely has hit me many times. I'll see you later.
See ya.